This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald Review, dated October 27th. We'll begin this segment of the program with a reading of the obituaries. Ronald Ray Ellison, 69, of Soddy Daisy, passed away October 25th after a short fight with cancer. Graveside services will be at 1:30 p.m. Friday, October 30th, at Georgia National Cemetery in Canton, Georgia, with military honors. There will be no visitation at the funeral home. Ronald Ellison is originally from Decatur, and he passed away in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee. Patricia Ann Ewald, 80, of Decatur, Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic School secretary, died Friday, October 23rd. Mass of Christian burial, 10 a.m. Wednesday, Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Visitation, 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, Morin and Goebel Funeral Home, with 4:30 p.m. Vigil Prayer Service. Burial at Boiling Springs Cemetery. Memorials to SMILE, S-M-I-L-E, St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, or Decatur Christian School. Kathy J. Isaac, 60, of Clinton, passed away at 12:30 p.m. October 24th at the Dr. John Warner Hospital in Clinton. Services will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, October 29th at the Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, with Jim Dan officiating. Burial will follow at the Lisenby Cemetery, Lane, Illinois. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 28th at the Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Memorials may be directed to the Dr. John Warner Hospital Foundation. Bertalan Kirali, K-I-R-A-L-Y, 78, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away on Sunday, October 25th, in his home. A memorial visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, October 29th, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society. Norman L. Buck McCoy, 80, of Mount Zion, passed away at 8:18 p.m. Saturday, October 24th, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. A service to celebrate Buck's life will be at 2 p.m. Wednesday, October 28th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion, with Reverend Tony Paulson officiating. Burial will be in Mount Zion Township Cemetery. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation beginning at 1 p.m. Wednesday afternoon until service time. Memorials may be made to the Mount Zion Fire Department. Delphine J. Rubin, 86, of Decatur, passed away at 12:15 a.m. Sunday, October 25th, in McKinley Court Nursing Home. Services to celebrate Delphine's life will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, October 28th, at Mount Calvary Lutheran Church. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, October 27th, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, and 1 hour prior to the services on Wednesday at the church. Entombment will take place in the Star of Hope Mausoleum at Graceland Cemetery. concluding with the flight home ceremony. Memorials may be directed to Mount Calvary Lutheran Church or Alzheimer's Association. Dax Alaric Sanchez, 19-day infant son of Mike and Elizabeth Sanchez of Normal, passed away 9:06 p.m. Saturday, October 24th, in OSF St. Joseph Medical Center, Bloomington. Dax was 19 days old. Mass of Christian burial will be noon Friday in St. Patrick Catholic Church, Myrna, 1001 North Towanda Barnes Road, Bloomington, with the Reverend Rogers Bayambasa and Monsignor Gretch Ketchum officiating. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday at Calvert and Metzler Funeral Home, Bloomington, and 10:30 a.m. to noon in the church. Memorials may be made to the family. Ivan H. Ike Sparling, 83, of Decatur, died at 4:21 a.m. Saturday, October 24th, in St. Mary's Hospital. Funeral service celebrating his life will be 11 a.m. Thursday, October 29th, at Hillside Bethel Tabernacle, 3575 Green Hill Road, Decatur, with Reverend Don Horath officiating. Visitation will be at the church on Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. Burial with military rites will be in Keller Cemetery, Lovington. We'll turn now to a featured article written by Emily Steele, H&R staff writer, and the headline is "Move Over, Kids." Halloween is all grown up. The holiday that was once dominated by children has turned into big business, with more than 157 million Americans celebrating the season by spending $6.9 billion this year for costumes, candy, parties, and decorations. The rapid growth has been led by 18 to 34-year-old millennials, according to the National Retail Federation. Most homes will spend about $75 on candy, costumes, decorations, and with Halloween falling on the weekend this year, plenty of booze to go around. For the first time, the Children's Museum of Illinois held a grown-ups-only event based around Halloween cocktails. The Thursday evening Boozeum program was the first in the CMI Adults Only series of planned fundraisers aimed at young professionals. A costumed crowd of adults went trick-or-treating, tried glowing cocktails, and listened to ghost stories. Quote, "We thought Halloween was the perfect way to kick this off. It's an easy, accessible event. It has that adult connotation," said Jen McMillan, Director of Marketing and Development. "It's a really fun way for us to introduce science experiments to adults." Most revelers will buy candy, $2.1 billion worth, and 2 out of 5 will decorate their home or yard, spending an average of $20. Blasting that average to bits are people such as Wayne Lockwood and his wife, Nan Russell Lockwood. The horror aficionados spend weeks and several hundred dollars on decorating for Halloween every year. "It's our favorite holiday," Russell Lockwood said. "I barely put up lights for Christmas." The couple start planning their elaborate spooky decorations as early as May, pulling from a stockpile of characters, coffins, and other odds and ends that fill most of their garage. They have nicknames for each of the hand-built pieces that fill their small front yard and porch at 750 West Wagoner Street. This year, they made a tribute to horror filmmaker Wes Craven, who died in August. And when they're done decorating, they wait for the congratulations and the inevitable screams. "We stand out and admire it, and all the neighbors come out," Russell Lockwood said. "We have parents who bring their kids on Halloween because they want them to be scared," end quote. But grown men and women have to pay for that privilege at the Scream Haunted Adventure. For 7 years, the haunted house has drawn thousands of people who wait in long lines for the pure pleasure of being scared. "We see a wide variety," producer and director Laurie Sturgill said, of their customers. "It does surprise me sometimes how many groups of adults come through." Sturgill said the venture raises about $20,000 for Decatur Celebration every year. "The adults that come through are, for the most part, enthusiasts traveling around central Illinois and visiting all the haunted houses," Sturgill said. I'll try to describe the photograph accompanying this article. It shows Nan Russell Lockwood, who is arranging Halloween decorations in her front yard on Wagoner Street. They have a number of tombstones. They have a very frightening figure, sort of between a skeleton and a clown, standing behind the tombstones. They have multiple strands of fake cobwebs strung everywhere. They have a wooden box that's shaped like a coffin with a skeleton in that. Other skeletons are propped up around the yard. And you can see that they're not quite finished yet. They have more containers around them. There are also lights. So it's a pretty ornate decoration. Let's see what some of our columnists have to say. First, we turn to Dear Abby. And the author of these letters is, of course, Jean Phillips. "Dear Abby, I am a recent nursing school graduate. My husband and I have a one-year-old, and I just found out I'm pregnant again. I'd like to get a job as soon as I can. My question is, should I tell prospective employers I'm pregnant? I don't want to be passed over because of my condition, but I also don't want to be hired and immediately inform them that I'll need time off when the baby comes. Am I legally or ethically obligated to disclose that I'm pregnant at an interview?" And this is signed, a nurse in Michigan. "Dear nurse, I think you have an ethical obligation to inform your prospective employer. However, you are not legally obligated to disclose that you are pregnant. If you were not hired because of your pregnancy, you might have a claim for discrimination. And the same is true if you were retaliated against for not volunteering the information." The next letter. "Dear Abby, my wife of 12 years, Marie, has a serious gambling problem. Every night she goes straight from work to the casino and stays there at least until 1 a.m. We both have low-paying jobs, and we can't afford this. Every time I mention it, she gets really mad and stalks out of the room. Not only is it an expensive habit, but I hardly ever get to see her anymore. Please help." signed Confused in Washington. Dear Confused, it appears you are married to a gambling addict who is in denial. That's why it's important to separate your finances from hers if you can. A lawyer can help you do that. There is an organization that might help you called GamAnon. It's a 12-step fellowship for husbands, wives, relatives, or friends of compulsive gamblers who have been affected by their loved one's problem. Its website is www.gam-anon.org. Please check it out. Here's another letter. Dear Abby, we live in the Pacific Northwest, and lately there has been a lot of news about an impending major earthquake due to hit our region. We understand it may not happen for a very long time, but it could also strike soon. We are planning to move to another part of the U.S. for our safety. My employer has an office there, and I can retain my job status and seniority. The problem we see is, what do we tell friends and coworkers about the reason for this transfer? We don't want to come off as Chicken Little for something that may not occur within our lifetimes, but we also don't want to endanger ourselves unnecessarily. Should we just say we are moving for family reasons, or tell the truth, or something else? Signed, Running Away in Vancouver. Dear Running Away, living in Southern California, this subject comes up in conversation periodically whenever we have a tremor. Years ago, after one of them, I met a woman who informed me that she and her husband were moving out of state for the same reason you are doing it. If you are not comfortable informing people that your reason for relocating is fear of an untimely death, I don't think you are required to. It would be dishonest, however, to say that you are looking for a new adventure. Mary Hunt, who writes at Everyday Cheapstake, has this column today. Pay your bills without a paycheck. The most important thing you can do to make your personal economy strong is have an umbrella, a contingency fund, with at least enough money to pay all of your bills without a paycheck for 3 to 6 months. Call it $10,000. Weekly, try to save 10% of your paycheck. It may sound like a lot, so if you can't do 10, start with 5% or even 1% and build up. Deposit the money automatically into your contingency fund. You won't miss what you don't see in the first place. Okay, you'll miss it for the first few months, but soon you really will not miss it. Until you have a fully funded contingency fund, approach this with scorched earth determination. No spending on anything that is not necessary or legally obligating until you reach your goal. Get rid of non-essentials. Give up such extras as cable TV, eating out, and gym memberships. Cut variable expenses. You can't cut off your utilities, stop eating, or give up driving, but you can reduce the cost of the food, energy, and fuel you buy. Opt for the cheapest supermarket and gas station. Turn out the lights and only run full appliances. Quit smoking. This suggestion requires no explanation, although it does beg the question, who can even afford to smoke these days? at about $7.50 for a pack of smokes, U.S. average. That's a $2,737 a year habit. And in New York City, it's double that. Yeah, $14.50 a pack, or $5,292 annually. Stop paying bank fees. If you're paying a $7.95 or higher per month fee for the privilege of maintaining an account, stop. Open an account at an online bank. They pay better interest rates anyway, such as Ally Bank, that doesn't charge a monthly maintenance fee for checking or saving accounts. Or check with a local credit union for free personal checking accounts. Some banks, such as U.S. Bank, even offer free business accounts. Pull back. Stop sending more money than required each month to your credit card companies, mortgage lender, or any other creditor. It's admirable that you're being diligent in repaying the debts, but if you continue to do this while living without money in the bank for major emergencies, you'll be setting yourself up to fall even deeper into debt. Clean out. Take a look through your cupboards and closets. Identify everything you haven't used in the past 6 months. Turn what you don't need into cash on a website such as eBay or Craigslist, or hold a yard sale. Adjust withholdings. Use the 2015 Federal Withholding Tax Calculator, available through the IRS website, to make sure you aren't having too much or too little income tax withheld from your pay. Increase your income. Get a second job or third. Work more hours at your current one. Get creative by making money doing things you already love to do, such as dog walking or selling handmade items. Give up your landline. More than 40% of American adults have given up their land-based telephone service. Are you in that group? If not, why not? Basic service costs at least $25 per month in most markets. Take lunch to work. Have you figured out what you're spending per year on eating lunch out? At $10 a day, you're spending $2,500, after tax dollars, that is, on lunch. Just think of all the dinner leftovers you throw out that could easily be tomorrow's lunch. Stop at the match. If you're contributing to a retirement account such as a 401k or 403b, don't stop now, but limit your contribution to the amount your employer matches. Once you have your contingency fund in place, return to your more aggressive contributions. We turn now to another article of local interest. The headline is Food Skills Classes Finally Get Kitchen. And this was written by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer, Dateline Decatur. The adult education students taking hospitality classes have something they've never had before, a kitchen. This is the first time for this program, said Lynette Mensah, the instructor at the Adult Education Center, who teaches the vocational skills for hospitality, while Claudia Williams teaches the academic skills. Initially, at Hickory Point Mall, we didn't have a kitchen, so we were very limited what we could do. There was no place to wash dishes, no places for cooking, and no place to prepare food at all. It was just a classroom setting. The move to the former Technical Academy building on East El Dorado Street last summer provided the program with a commercial kitchen and dining room. And now, if the state of Illinois would pass a budget and provide the Adult Education Department with funding, those adult learners would be able to gain skills and experience that weren't possible before the move. Adult education is focused on bridge programs that bring up people's skills with the ultimate goal of post-secondary training and employment, beginning with basic skills and earning a GED. Students can also earn a food handler certificate required for anyone holding a job working with food, and with Williams' help, bring up their reading and math proficiency. With the use of the kitchen, they'll also be able to learn hands-on food preparation skills. This week, they'll begin learning to adjust recipes up or down, weighing and measuring, and next week, they'll begin learning about nutrition, recommended daily requirements, and planning meals. For jobs and going on professionally to Richland Community College or another program, they'll have experience in a professional kitchen, Williams said. The class was Introduction to Hospitality in the past, but will be revamped into a culinary program, Mensah said, though the course will also include other areas of hospitality, such as hotels and customer satisfaction. The course culminates in a final project where students demonstrate what they've learned. Some students have asked about the food manager certification, and Mensah is certified by the state to provide that training as well. But the Adult Education Department doesn't have that capability at the moment. Mensah said she hopes that will be possible down the road. We have time for one item from the weird news. This comes from North Webster, Indiana. Authorities say a northern Indiana woman is recovering after being shot in the foot by her dog. And the dog's name? Trigger. Indiana Conservation Officer Jonathan Boyd says 25-year-old Allie Carter laid her 12-gauge shotgun on the ground without the safety on during a waterfall hunt in a wildlife area. Boyd said Carter's chocolate Labrador retriever, Trigger, stepped on top of the shotgun and depressed the trigger. He says Carter was shot in the left foot at point-blank range, suffering injuries to her foot and toes. She was treated at two hospitals and released. This wildlife area is about 140 miles north of Indianapolis. This has been Carol Bond with the October 27th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. I've enjoyed reading with you, and I look forward to reading with you again next week.